Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
The wings are extra spicy this week.
It's getting hotter. It's increasing.
This is Danny and Dusty on Wildcard Week.
Injured? Don't trust just anyone to something so personal. Call George McCoy at Warren Allen, online at warrenallen.com.
Danny and Dusty on 1080.
My body's like, this is poison.
The Fan.
I think my leg just cramped. Hour number three here on a Monday on Danny and Dusty, whether you're listening on 1080 AM, watching along on youtube.com/1080AM The Fan, or twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Thank you for hanging out with us on this wonderful, wonderful Monday. The first time we've had the gang together in 3 weeks?
It's been a while.
I think it's been three weeks.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I think it's 3 weeks since,
last two weeks.
Since all three of us have been in the building. If not three, it's pretty damn close. But with that, we haven't had you on to talk about the Ducks and the Buckeyes down at the Rose Bowl and do a put a bow on the Duck season, as it were.
Yeah, it was that thing got away in a hurry, and you just kind of saw... I don't think anybody expected that to be the way that game started or the way that thing played out. Because, I mean, I was expecting in talking about, you know, a game that's going to be played on the margins, especially after what we saw October 12th. And the fact that we've seen market improvements on both sides of the football throughout the course of the rest of the regular season. And, I mean, the way that Ohio State jumped out on Oregon – in that first quarter. I mean, it was, we talked about this after the Tennessee game where it looked like Chip Kelly's offense again, right? It looked like Chip Kelly was calling his offense, not a version of what he did. He had grabbed the reins and said, nope, this is mine. And you saw exactly what that looked like from the very first play of the game. I mean, they line up on the first play from scrimmage, and we talked about this in the Tennessee game, right? The way they softened up Tennessee was they were hitting the screen game, and they were using those fog and those smoke screens, and they softened them up. You need to pull the safeties in, and then boom, you replace the safety over the backside with the post, right? Very first play of the game, they fake the bubble screen, and they take the tight end. Like, he's going out to kick out the corner. Boom, he's up the sideline. Chunk play. On a bubble screen, it's a wrinkle from what they did effectively against Tennessee. All of your prep, all of your film study is telling you, all right, this is the action. I've got to set the edge. I've got to come up hard if I'm the corner because they're going to get that bubble and they're going to take it back up the sideline. Well, corner comes up. Tight end goes down and he goes vertical. Very first play of the game, right? Second play. It was also something that, well, the third play, because second play was an incompletion. Even though Will Howard probably could have tucked it and ran for a handful of yards. The third play of the game, which was a touchdown, was something we also talked about in coming out of the Tennessee game, which was Chip Kelly loves to put safeties in conflict. And we talked about it. And when I was talking about it, I was saying, look, remember all those times we say, how is Jeffrey Mayo so open? He's mm-hmm. the one guy you have to guard, right?
Very fast and straight line.
And here is Emeka Egbuka. How is he that wide open? Well, you are pulling a safety up to get Jeremiah Smith, who's on a bender out to the corner, and as the safety commits, Will Howard goes, got him, replace him with the football, and go and throw the ball to a playmaker to make a play early.
And then like track speed.
From the first three plays, it was just like, yep, chips back. And we talked about this leading up in that Oregon's offense played flawless on the offensive line in the first meeting. Mm-hmm. Quite literally.
Dylan Gabriel was touched flawless. Twice. Twice. Two quarterback hits in the entire game.
And I talked about that in the when I came on for the pregame show, is that like, hey, you know, Oregon's offensive line was flawless. Don't think they need to be flawless, but can you play
some version of that?
Can you play well enough? They and look, Ohio State, to a man, they played a better football game. When Dan Lanning jumped on the sword and he said that it was all on the coaches after the game and that they needed to put their guys in a better position to play and get ready. They did. Sure, they did. But also, it comes down to mano a mano, dude for dude. Ohio State was just better on New Year's Day. They were. In the where it was the most apparent was their defensive line, which was a non-factor. We didn't hear JT Tuimoloau or Jack Sawyer's name the first meeting in October.
At all.
They heard him a lot. And then you had guys like, you know, a true freshman, Edric Houston, comes in, and he was number 96. Mm-hmm. He comes in, he generates four pressures. Like, guys that their depth was starting to show. Simon at the linebacker was the defensive MVP. He was all over the field. But the guy who was the biggest and most dynamic playmaker and gave the bonus fits was Caleb Downs, mm-hmm. who we knew was the best safety in all of college football last year when he transferred from Alabama up to Ohio State. We knew this about Caleb Downs. What Jim Knowles allowed him to do is he was allowed to read and react. And Nick Saban had said this, right? Like, he instinctually one of the best football players. He's coached.
There's a level of like Troy Polamalu, Ed Reed to him.
The fact that that dude was able to make plays at the line of scrimmage and then also 25 yards downfield, that was tough. And look, scheme is one thing. Like, everybody's like, hey, you know, why didn't Dylan Gabriel cock back and why were they running the ball on early downs? It's because there was nowhere to throw the ball.
Yeah.
Like, they're in the back end.
They took away everything.
They were incredible.
They had eight sacks, but I'd say at least three, probably four, and maybe even five of them were covered sacks.
They were outstanding downfield. Yeah. And Dylan Gabriel, to his credit, and when the game is in gets out of hand quickly like that, you know, would you like him to tuck and run? Sure, but what is it going to do for you? And you were behind the chains early in almost every single situation, right? Do you know Ohio State scored six times in the first half? They had two field goals and four touchdowns in the first half. They had six third downs.
I mean,
they faced third down as many times as they scored the ball.
I mean, they chunked over and over and over.
That was crazy.
And over again. Like, look, I know, you know, everybody loves you hate the Ducks. Look, I wanted the Ducks to win that game. I told Dusty before he left.
I think it was five scores ahead.
But, you know, I hope, you know, you guys go down there and win. One, because I hate Ohio State. Two, because I wanted to see them win.
Oh, no, it was six. Yeah.
I did not expect that game to go that direction.
No.
Like, I thought, and we talked about this, you know, making predictions before the game. I thought this game was going to be very tight. Or over at halftime. But when I was saying over at halftime, I thought it was going to be the Ohio State team that we saw against Michigan. And that was where, when I made that prediction, I'm like, maybe Tennessee was a little bit false. And I thought maybe Oregon had the juice. But the over at halftime Ohio State version of that was surprising.
Yeah. And I mean, that is, they were really, really good. And they have been really good. And look, that is one where you kind of take your medicine. There is one thing that I felt like is as the day went on, you know, and everybody's overreacting and, you know, Tosh LaPoy needs to go and, you know, Will Stein needs to go. This team went 13-1, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about they went undefeated in the Big Ten. They won a Big Ten title. They had done, in beating Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. It's only been done one other time by Michigan State in 2015. Okay. You go through and you win the Big Ten title in your first year in the conference. You are the number one overall seed. That is a good season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there also is this, I understand the people saying that, you know, oh, well, they're talking national. Then they were talking national championship. And, like, that's where guys were saying, this is why, you know, I transferred in. This is why I came here. All that stuff. There is a middle of, it's not a failure, but it's not the overwhelming success that you would consider a season with the expectations that were had. They were 13-1. And I think they lost, and I've said this, and I have not wavered on this. What have I said about this Ohio State team since I watched them in the spring game last year?
You said it's the most talented roster in the country.
They're playing like it right now. They are. And I've said that even when through their ups and downs
you
of the season.
You have remained steadfast that it is the most talented roster in the country.
And they're playing like it right now. And Chip Kelly, Jim Knowles, their coordinators, Ryan Day, the head coach, they're maximizing every single ounce of that team right now with the way that you have seen them beat both Tennessee and Oregon. That's a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like it's a sour way for that season to end because it ends with a thud. And everything was just like coming up Oregon
this thing
all
is,
season
if
long.
If you lose
right?
the game, and I'm not saying you lose it like let's say it's 31-32 the other way. That sucks too.
Yeah.
But if this game's 41-31,
yeah,
where it's like, yeah, Ohio State won, but you were there. Like but it just wasn't your day. This was... And I know the final score is 41-21, but Ohio State put the horses away, guys.
They did.
It just wasn't even close. And that's the thing that sucks, because those losses, it puts you in an interesting spot, which I think it's a good way to kind of put a bow on this on next segment, is what does this mean for the Ducks? Like, where are we at in the steps? Where do you kind of take solace or... When you do the self-evaluations, like what comes out of that? And we'll get to that next year on Danny and Dusty, 10 of the Fan.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Wild Card Week edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by George McCoy at WarrenAllen.com.
On 1080 The Fan.
This is a good spot to take a look and do the autopsy on the Ducks season. And not just that final game, but what this season meant, the progression of the Ducks under Dan Lanning, and to do the self-evaluation of what was this season, not just the final game, but the entirety of this season. What did you learn from it, and where do they go from here?
Yeah, this team has gone through a lot from week one to where they were. And I think what you saw was the evolution starting of Lanning as an experienced coach, right? The first 3 years under, now three complete years under Lanning. Like, I think people need to remember that. This was only year three.
And not just year three at Oregon, it's his year three as a head coach.
Now, we saw early on they came out of the gate and with expectations through the roof. Look, it was slow out of the gate. And I don't think anybody would have, after that Boise State game, said you're looking back on a year that ended 13-1
mm-hmm.
and undefeated in conference play and, you know, the Big Ten champions. Like that, because of the way that it started, you saw over the course of the year, Oregon shored up some things. You saw a team that got better over the course of the year and survived what is a gauntlet, right? Eight games without a bye, right? Going through an entirely new conference where I think it doesn't get enough credence with all the conference reshuffling is that you, even though coaches leave, you still have books on familiarity of personnel, teams, style of play. They usually don't change sweepingly from one coach to another, right? Because a lot of those guys are still on a roster. Well, Oregon came into a brand new conference and they had to learn everything from scratch, right? From unfamiliarity of, you know, travel when you go on the road to, you know, those are small things, right? That don't affect you on the field, but they went through 13-0 unscathed. That's a good year.
Yeah.
That is a really good year. I think where the lump is going to be at, or the bump in the road for Oregon is, look, this was the number one overall seed in a playoff that's been widely criticized. Like when Nick Saban is saying things like, you know, if I'm an Oregon fan, I'd be in my mom's basement, you know, firing off, you know, how we got screwed by the playoff committee. When Nick Saban is saying things like that, there's going to be a really hard look at what the playoff is going to look like moving forward. But the reality of it is, and this is something that was consistent with Lanning throughout the preparation for Ohio State, is if you're going to win, you're going to beat good teams, right? You're going to have to get past a team like that at some point. And whether it's now or whether it's later, you know, you were going to have to get past that buzzsaw that was Ohio State. They didn't do it, right? And now it becomes a, every coach that has gotten over the hump has addressed whatever it is that bugaboo for this year. Last year, that bugaboo was Washington, right? I mean, you can look at this season and you can say, if Ohio State or Penn State win the national title, you went 13-1 and you beat the national champ at some point during the season. Well, how do you do it when it matters the most, right? And that's what all of these coaches are looking for. And you look at a guy like Kirby Smart, right? He had to go through this with Alabama. All right, if I can get him once, how do I get him again?
Yes.
And how do I get over that hump in when the stakes are even higher? That's why you got to look at it and say, this is a third year under Dan Lanning. The roster is going to turn over. It'll look a lot different. You know, guys like Jordan James, Derek Harmon, Tez Johnson all declaring for the draft today.
Dylan Gabriel?
Well, yeah, but no, those three just declared today for the draft. Like Dylan Gabriel's going to be gone. Jordan Birch is going to be gone. Like, there's going Jabbar Muhammad. There's going to be a lot of new faces that are coming in. But this is where you're going to start seeing Lanning's recruits come in. Because I think that's something that people also need to, those that have criticized the way that Oregon has built this team through a portal, well, he's been, only had to recruit high school kids up until this point. Now you're starting to see his kid guys are going to start cycling through, ready to play.
When you see them turn into upperclassmen.
And there will be a lot of portal guys in there as well. But you're going to, this roster has been built and has started to stack recruiting classes to where, all right, now it's get to the playoff, win a playoff game. The reality of this season, though, for everybody that is disappointed or somebody that wants to take victory laps on it for falling short of the national title, they went 13-0 in Big Ten play. Like, that is...
And it's pretty clear that the Big Ten was the best conference in the country this year after seeing what the SEC didn't do in bowl season.
And it's not like they didn't play any of those teams because two of the, you know, four that are remaining, they were on that schedule
and,
at some point.
And beat them.
Now, did they fall short of the ultimate goal and what these guys were not afraid to talk about this year, which was the national championship? Absolutely, they did. This season ended with a massive thud. And I don't think that that's anything that Lanning or any Oregon player would disagree with. But there, it was a great third-year building block where I think every year we've seen it start to escalate a little bit more for Dan Lanning and his staff.
There's been like a level of growth, and we talked about this Thursday or Friday. The only coach that has done it in the college football title era of that we're currently kind of not even currently in, because this one, even this one's different, but the playoff era was Bob Stoops.
Yeah,
who did it in year two.
In a two-team playoff too, right?
So, you know, it is interesting to see where this is going to go. The question I think that I have is, you did just mention basically the core of the team is gone. When you're talking about the biggest name, like, you're going to lose both your tackles.
Yeah.
You're going to, you're going to lose your best pass rushers with the exception of Mateo.
Yeah. Well, Tatum Tuioti, Mateo Uiagalelei will be back. Amari Washington. Well, and look, who the hell knows with the transfer portal too, right?
And that's what I was just going to get to, is like, what does this look like in the next version? And the Ducks have caught lightning in a bottle in their last two quarterbacks, which is the most important position in all of sports, that quarterback spot. Is it in-house? Do they go to the portal? And it's I think that's an interesting thing to kind of see what comes out of this.
And right now, I think it is going to be in-house. I mean, whatever in-house looks like, right? Is in-house
because
Austin Novosad? Is it Dante Moore, who was committed to Oregon, mm-hmm. goes to UCLA,
back
says
to Oregon.
Nope, sits for a year, redshirts for a year, which you want to talk about the world of NIL where guys are just chasing
uncommon.
And going for it. He's like, all right, I went through it. I got beaten to the ground. Now I need, I want to learn, develop, grow. And so Dante Moore sitting there, Austin Novosad is behind him. Luke Moga was a four-star recruit. Keeley Smith Jr. was there and practicing with the team during bowl preparations. And look, they lost one, you know, to the portal. Was it Sagapotelli?
Darren Sagapotulele. Sagapotulele.
You know. Yep. He goes and he re-enters the portal. Look, there's people that are crushing the kid. This is like, I won't do that because if you make a mistake and you realize it quickly, like, nope, this isn't the place for me. That's why the portal exists. Yeah. Go. That's fine. And there was the quote from ESPN that was attributed to him and said that he didn't feel like he was, you know, a main focus for them. If that's how you feel, good on you. Go
be where the main focus.
Yeah. Go do that. Go find somewhere where you can play early. But it told him he didn't feel like he was going to be a guy who was going to play early.
Look, I'll say the cautionary tale here is that Malachi Nelson did the exact same thing at USC and then went to Boise State.
Yeah.
And then he left Boise State and now he just transferred to UTEP.
Yeah.
So.
But that is.
Understand the things that are out there for you.
I'm not going to sit there and just be like, yeah, what? You know, the system may be broken in the NCAA mm-hmm. and the transfer portal. There's nothing they can do about that.
No.
But if a guy doesn't want to be there, what do you want to hold him
honestly,
hostage?
Yeah, that's the best part about the transfer portal to me is that
yeah.
it's not good for either one of you if somebody doesn't want to be there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I think there is value in, look, my co-host on the program podcast, Colin, and he tells a really good story this week about, you know, Mike Bellotti essentially telling him, no, you're not going home. You're not. And there are valuable lessons you can learn in going through that struggle. And I think you absolutely 100% can. No doubt about it. But if you have a guy who's in a week is like, I don't want to be here, then don't.
Let him go.
Then don't.
Let him go.
Right?
That's an easy one. It's
pretty
simple.
They can become a cancer just as quick as they can become a guy who yeah. turns into a valuable piece for you and works through some stuff. So, The building has to continue, and that's the thing. You mentioned there's a lot of key pieces from this Oregon team that are going to be gone. I think one guy to keep an eye on is what Tosh LePoy said the week of the Rose Bowl, and this could be a massive development because it's a position group that we had our questions about mm-hmm. heading into this year. They played very well as a unit, but are going to be taking some massive losses. Yeah, without Jeffrey Bassa and potentially Bryce Betcher, that linebacking core looks a lot different, but if Bryce Betcher can get that fifth year,
I say that's going to go to a ruling, right?
Yeah, in the NCAA, there was right after LePoy said that there was a report that came out that the NCAA just may allow guys
Everyone.
To play 5 years yeah. no matter what. Which, whoa, no way! But if he gets a fifth year and he's back on the roster next year, that alleviates a lot of the mm-hmm. stresses because that dude became a dude. Yeah. For Oregon this year.
And the whole idea of the NCAA, we've seen this now. They're just going to roll over and show their belly when it comes to lawsuits.
Yeah.
Because
he's
they're
a good boy.
You know what I mean? Why spend money going to court getting your butt handed to you?
Yep.
So, all right, coming up next, the Portland Trailblazers win a road game and get one from Damian Lillard yet again in the Milwaukee Bucks. Also, they are 30 days away from the NBA trade deadline. Where do the Trailblazers and the NBA sit? But first, here's the Big Kahuna with a Sports Center update.
I hear they got some tasty burgers.
Portland Trailblazers in the midst of a five-game road trip, falling to the Los Angeles Lakers, and then heading, as one does, from L.A. to Milwaukee.
Yo!
Your very standard NBA road trip.
Yeah.
It was an ugly game, but a fun game.
Yeah. That was a beautiful game for the Blazers, because when they win against a good team,
it doesn't hurt them.
It should be ugly.
Yes.
It should be ugly. And it was an ugly game, and you want to drag them into deep water, mm-hmm. and you want to. That's how you're going to win games with a roster that's not as talented.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they
did.
So
I thought it was beautiful.
No, it was. I genuinely thought it was good basketball, number one, because Zach Zarba was the lead officiating ref on that game, and they decided to all take their whistles collectively and put them in their pockets. The Milwaukee Bucks shot 9 total free throws, the Blazers 13, and that's with some hack-a-shacks at the end. And As a heads up, Giannis shoots 11 a game on the season. So the foul grifting went out, and here's the recipe for success was this. Anthony Simons got dumb hot, had, was it 20, 25 in the second half? Beyond that, they made Giannis a volume scorer. Dame was limited, and the Bucks didn't march the free throw line. Mm-hmm. That was basically it. And the game being more physical allowed the Trailblazers to play a brand of basketball that is more conducive to how they play, which is pull them into the muck and grind it out, turn it into a rock fight.
Yeah.
And I thought you saw, again, you continued to have another good game from Denny Avdija, who had 19, 14, and 4. It's the second consecutive game of 19 points, 10 or more rebounds, and 4 more assists. Over his last six games, he's averaging 20 points, 8 boards, 4 assists.
Yeah.
Really good.
Woo. Whoa.
And for everybody freaking out about them winning too many games, Jeff.
Jeff, how do we feel? Panic meter. Jeff Russ, panic meter. Go. Oh. Was that a real? Mm. What end did that come out of?
Boy, I would have had to stand up real fast for that one.
Just so we're clear, the Utah Jazz have been winning games. I don't know if you've noticed this. They also play the New Orleans.
What they did the Miami Heat?
You hate to see it. Also, the Utah Jazz play the New Orleans Pelicans twice coming up.
Ooh, and the Jazz Pelicans.
So.
Somebody's got to win game?
Yeah. Look for an evening of the standings.
Yeah, but what do we do with Toronto, Charlotte, Washington?
What do you mean?
All three of those are really bad, and they're not winning games.
Yeah, I watched Toronto play because I'm a sicko, Toronto, Orlando the other day.
Yeah.
Because Orlando's been winning games without Franz and Paolo.
Sure.
And I was like, let me see what they're doing. Look, the Pelicans are bad because they're bad and injured and defunct. The Raptors are bad because they're just bad. They're just a bad basketball.
Well, the Hornets have lost 10 in a row,
mm-hmm.
and like they're starting to roll out. Like, at least it was competitive. They lost 10 straight.
Yeah, and the thing
the
is,
doldrums,
they're
brother.
Based on net rating, they are projected to win 4 more games than the Blazers. Still,
yikes! Dog.
So as the schedules kind of start to even out, the Blazers had the fifth toughest schedule remaining for the rest of the NBA.
Well, that net rating, they're already plus 3 in the net rating, right? They've won 3 Blazers. They've already won 3 more games than they're supposed to have won.
4.3.
4.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. They're now at 12 wins, and you're talking about the worst teams in the NBA are Washington, Charlotte, New Orleans, 6-7-7. Toronto at 8. Utah at 9. I would imagine there's going to be some pretty egregious tanking, which is a nice segue into the trade deadline. So I made some phone calls this weekend, talked to numerous executives around the league, and this is what I got time and time again. Boy, does this CBA suck something fierce. And they were all like, it's not that we don't want to make moves, is that if we make move A, we can't make B, C, or D. And you're running into a lot of teams who are saying, this CBA needs to be revisited. The aprons need to go. This is too prohibitive. And in talking to people around the league, there is a very clear understanding that the second that the CBA can be revisited, it will. And they will make pretty substantial changes because the implications of the first and second apron are just too prohibitive. Now, the owners are still going to try to find a way to have some quasi-hard cap. And it may just end up being a hard cap. That might end up being the thing.
Huh.
Where it's just, you know, we're going to have a hard cap, and this is what it is, and if you somehow exceed it because of X, Y, or Z, it's going to be financially punitive to the point of, like, you better only be here for a year. Because right. If not, it's going to cost you, like, $500 million. So, let's see what kind of happens out of that. Now, that being said, there's a belief that, number one, the Jimmy Butler trade is going to happen relatively soon.
Yeah, well, the way he sounds, yeah.
There's two different worlds that exist. The Heat trade him before or at the deadline, or they wait until the offseason to do a sign-in trade. But does Jimmy Butler, like, you have to worry about Jimmy Butler opting into his $52 million option, and when that happens, and all those things, and, you know, it's, Jimmy holds some of the cards here in that vein, right? Now, the other part of this is, the Heat probably aren't going to get anything for Jimmy. It's just not going to happen because of those aprons. The teams that are over in the apron level, teams can't aggregate salaries to go get him. So that limits some of the teams already out of the gate that can't trade for him. Okay, now you get into the teams that can only go X percentage to match. Now you hear teams like Milwaukee Memphis, Phoenix, Houston. I've been told by pretty much everyone that the Warriors are out as it pertains to Jimmy Butler. I still believe that two most likely landing spots for Jimmy are, or I should say three, are Memphis, Houston, and Phoenix. Those are the ones that I keep falling back on. Does somebody else somehow...
So Jimmy Butler, if Bradley Beal waives his no-trade clause?
Which I've been told by multiple people that Bradley Beal would waive his no-trade clause for Miami, which, duh. Where do you want a vacation, dude? Phoenix or Miami? Either one's fine. He doesn't want to get sent to... Like, when Beal got dealt to the Suns, the Bucks did look around Beal before getting to Dame because they didn't think about how different machinations would work, right? So that was something, and Beal also said no to going right to Milwaukee because it's Milwaukee and he has a no-trade clause.
Now,
so,
Jimmy Butler does not have a no-trade clause?
No. Bradley Beal is the only player in the league with one. His agent, great job. Now, the reason I'm talking about Butler is not just to laugh at Miami Heat because suckers told you, but you wonder if that does work as a trigger if somehow one of the teams with another big salary needs to move something somewhere else. And that's like, does a LaVine get moved along the side? Does a Michael Porter Jr. get moved along the side? Does a Brandon Ingram get moved along the side? Because if one of those deals goes, does that where Portland finds themselves getting Jeremy Grant in a deal?
Yeah, I don't like what you've said because all this sounds like is that this means that there will be very little movement for the Portland Trail Blazers.
I don't think there is going to be much movement. I think
and that to me, and we can blame the CBA, but we knew what the CBA was going to be.
Nobody knew it was going to be this prohibitive. Just the language in it. That's been the same message that I've been told from everyone. In the last CBA, there was loopholes. You could find certain things to do. This one, they button that stuff up, man. That's basically what it's come back down to. For the Trailblazer side of things, they're not going to give Jeremy Grant away for less than they value him. They're not going to trade him for a fake first. They're just not. Like, there's not a world that exists where I think that's going to happen.
Well, either that or Pat Riley, who holds a grudge as well as you do. If Pat Riley were to say, F you, you're going to Washington, right? Like, and we are, like, to just send a message to Jimmy Butler.
Sure. If you find that organization. But I don't think that organization makes that move because Jimmy's deal is expiring.
Yeah.
And wherever he goes, he's going to get an extension. So that's, again, where Jimmy kind of holds the leverage here.
That's great for Jimmy Butler.
It is. It's a fantastic place to be because he is able to stand on nearly even ground with Pat Riley, which nobody has ever done. Not LeBron James, not Dwayne Wade, not Shaquille O'Neal.
I think one thing that is head-scratching and kind of sucks is this all comes, like you're talking about the prohibitive nature of the collective bargaining agreement right now for trades, is that, you know, this comes on the heel of that Ant and Jason Quick.
Yes.
Right? Where you're starting to hear his frustrations. And that's one thing that we have talked about. Chauncey Billups has done a really good job of keeping guys that active and engaged and want to be here. You read some of those quotes and it's like, oh boy.
Yeah, no.
I don't think he, you know, I have not mentioned things like that.
About his frustrations this year. I talked about when he made the first comments at the with the exit interviews. Well,
that's a slippery slope then.
And then I said this then, and I'll say it again now. If Anthony Simons wanted to be traded this summer, he could have asked out. He did not ask out.
Yep.
Now, do I think Ant is open to the idea of being dealt? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could read that and not come away with that.
Yeah.
Now, but Ant also, and he said it explicitly in the interview with Quick, he's not a guy who's going to demand a trade.
Yeah.
So does that mean he's going to get moved to the deadline? No, because the Blazers have not shopped Anthony Simons. That's not something that's happened. Teams have called about him in the past, but again, talking to executives around the league, I did like a quasi straw poll of like, what's the median line of contracts that teams are just like staying away from? Basically anything over $20 million. Because
he's at 25 and then 27 next year.
But it's not the idea that he's not worth that. It's when you make deals of with money that much, with where teams are in relation to the apron, it's difficult for teams to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And these, you get these teams that, like the Nets, that are weirdly enough kind of prioritizing cap space. And it's like, why? What are they trying to do? Like, are they trying to do another Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving situation? Or are they willing to take on bad money? Because the thing is, going forward, almost no team wants to be anywhere near bad money.
Well, and that's where you think of everything that you're kind of outlining and saying, is that the NBA is trending more towards tradable assets being a thing of the past, and free agency being where teams have to operate and you have to win is in free agency, which...
And contracts coming down.
Contracts will be coming down, but that's not the sign for small market teams that we hoped it would be. This would actually help smaller market teams be able to move guys on in season and in the offseason.
Yes and no. The thing about that makes it a little more interesting, in the sense of, if a team does have cap space,
yeah,
it's no longer about, well, I need the Lakers to have cap space, or I need the Knicks to have cap space. What if they just don't? And now all of a sudden you do have to take a deal in a small market because they're the ones that have cap space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like where I think some of this is headed, in a sense. But if you're the Blazers, I think the thing that they're looking at is, how do we capitalize on what we have? They've had offers on Robert Williams. They have real offers, but I don't think they want to move him because they value what he is and what he brings to this team. Mm-hmm. And you talk about Matisse Thybulle, who's been out basically the entire year, or has been out the entire year, injured. Is he a guy that they look to get on the floor and possibly shop? Probably, you know?
Okay, but here's my question. They value Robert Williams, mm-hmm. what he brings the organization, what he brings to the floor, but isn't the goal organizationally not to win games right now?
Yes, which is...
So is that what they're valuing?
Well, no, the interesting part of it is that Rob hasn't played the last two games.
Yeah.
And it's not because he's hurt, and it's not because they're protecting his trade value. It's because they're choosing to have one of Rob or Donovan Klingon play.
Yeah.
Because the two big stuff just isn't working.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of like, okay, how do we make this work?
Right.
And that's the decision that Joe Cronin has handed Chauncey Billups, and that's the path he's decided to walk. I'm not saying they're not going to make any moves. I'm just saying it's going to be a difficult proposition for them to kind of end up in all of this.
Woo!
And it's not just them. It's the entire league.
Yeah.
So as this, we'll put a nice little bow on today's show when we get back here on Danny and Dusty, Timmy the Fan.
It's time for a Blazers report on the Fan. The inside story on the Portland Trail Blazers. Brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria.
The Portland Trail Blazers continue on their road trip tonight, taking on... Who are they taking on tonight? My God, I just totally blanked. The Detroit Pistons.
Detroit.
That's right. The Chauncey Billups in Detroit. My brain went completely sideways there for a second. They're taking on the Detroit Pistons tonight in Detroit. Game 3 of their 5-game road stretch before they come home and take on the Miami Heat. Perfect timing for that. Right when Jimmy's set to not return. The Portland Trailblazers injury report only has Matisse Thybulle and Jeremy Grant, who is still out with the facial contusion. This Trailblazers report on the Fan is brought to you by Aztec Willie's Taqueria, the best place to go before and after games or any event. Check them out on the corner of Southeast 15 and Broadway at AztecWillies.com.
This is a Wild Card Week edition of Danny and Dusty.
Brought to you by George McCoy at WarrenAllen.com.
On 1080 The Fan.
The Portland Trailblazers do take on the Detroit Pistons tonight, and they are at 12 wins, and boy, are we hitting the dog days. Are you you tuning into the road trip in mid-late January for the Portland Trailblazers?
This trip? Yeah, well, now, you know, got a little bit more time on my hands.
Yeah?
Yeah. A little bit more.
Football season is over, so it's officially basketball.
Well, tonight
season?
I have. Tonight we have FCS National Championship game. Montana State. North Dakota State. Let's go. Bison Bobcats. Ooh. All right. Giddy up, Buttercup.
Haven't seen that matchup before.
No. So, yeah, I will be watching Blazers and Pistons.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to watch a little.
No, okay. I will be.
Dual screen?
Are you kidding me? Yeah, I'm going to watch that. But that. Look, I've got time to love both equally.
Look, I'm going to give Jeff Rust a little cause for concern here.
Okay.
The Blazers' next three opponents are the Pistons.
Uh-oh.
The Pelicans.
Oh boy.
And now the Luka and Kyrie-less.
Yeah, 1 to 2 weeks without Kyrie.
And then they play the Miami Heat, their first game back without Jimmy Butler.
Uh-oh.
And then the Brooklyn Nets.
Uh-oh.
We need to.
I think those Brooklyn Nets are exactly what a half game better than Portland right now.
The Blazers might need to see some knee tendinopathy.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Look, if they go on a little bit of a streak here, I will enter into the okay. They're winning too many games because there are games here that they should, in all honesty, on a normal season, lose, like the Pelicans, like the Mavericks, like the Heat. Those would be games you expect them to lose because they have that little stretch. Then they have Clippers, Rockets, Bulls, and then they go Heat, Magic, Hornets. It's like, oh no.
That's not great, Bob.
Oh no.
That's not great.
That's basically kind of your lead up before you get a couple more games. You have a nice little homestand before you go into the All-Star break.
Yeah.
But the Heat, Magic, Hornets is a 3-game road trip, and then you have, what was it, 5-6 at home. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 at home. Good God. They have a 7-game homestand leading into the All-Star break.
That's a lot of home games. And some bad teams coming up. Rust is going to be all over this. Rust is going to be so mad if the Blazers peel off a couple, which could happen tonight.
Because you have the Phoenix Suns have benched Brad Beal and Yusuf Nurkic, so they play the Suns twice.
Yeah, because of
they
locker room issues?
They're struggling. They are in an absolute skid. So, remember, it could always be worse.
Jimmy Butler will pull them out of it.
Yeah. If not, he'll fight them all.
Which would be just as hilarious.
Be funny.
Yep. All right. Hey, by the way, I think my rooting interests are in squarely in Montana State's corner.
Oh,
right,
we're
now
going against each other.
Oh, you're going North Dakota State?
Come on, man.
5 Oregonians. Come on, man. That's not like a slam dunk. This is 5 Oregonians playing for Montana State.
No, there you go.
You know? You got a couple of them from Central Catholic, West Salem, Lake O. You got some Oregonians on that team. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say, go Cats, beat the Bison.
I got a lot of friends at North Dakota State. So.
Okay. I got none at Montana State.
There you go.
But go Cats.
Oh, babe.
I just go with whatever team has more local guys.
That's fair.
Montana State, that's the one in Bozeman, right?
That is Bozeman.
Okay.
That is Bozeman. The Grizz are in Missoula. Don't get those confused when you go there.
Yeah.
Don't get those confused when you go there. Great bars in Bozeman.
Mm.
Been there a couple of times.
That was the one you said there's one there has a bunch of stuff on the wall?
No, that's Butte.
I mean, Butte is not great. Butte is not a Butte.
Mm. It is not. They dug
more,
a,
it's
they
more like butt.
Dug a city out of the side of a mountain. We're like, here it is.
And Danny's right. It is more like butt.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. All right. That does it for us today. Up next, you got 4 hours of power from their mouths to your ears. Prime time with Isaac and Sook. Have a great Monday, everybody. We'll see you Tuesday from noon to 3 right here on The Fan.
Bye.